Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbis and T-Mac.
Tyler and T-Mac will be back on Monday. I'm Rod Sharon along with Denver 7's Troy Rank, and we're unpacking the end of the Avalanche season. We'll be getting ready for Game 3 tonight down at Ball Arena at near full capacity. Nikola Jokic gets his MVP tonight. We'll talk a ton about that, especially as we move closer and closer to the game. Troy, we spent most of the first hour on the Avalanche and specifically what changes or moves they may make and where their tolerance might be. And as I've mentioned, and I'm not advocating for it, but changing a coach is a lot easier than changing the players. It just is. But we've heard a lot on the other side over the last few weeks about Michael Malone as well, despite the fact that teams in the second round without Jamal Murray. Looking at these two coaches, and I'm just going to kind of start with this, Troy, do you think the discussion's even fair with either one of them, if they're the right fit for the team to take the next level? Because you got, on one hand, they don't quote-unquote deserve to get fired based on their winning. But on the other hand, if you ask yourself, you know, in your honest moment at night, whether you're Tim Connelly or Joe Sakic, does this guy pass my, as Joel Klatt puts it, confetti test? Can I see Mike Malone up on that stage holding a trophy? Can I see Jared Bednar hoisting the cup? Can I really see it? You think it's fair to have the discussion?
Well, in the case of Bednar, they are a victim of their own expectation, and they do need to have that question of, can Bednar lead this team to a Stanley Cup? Because the difference between the Avs and Nuggets for me is the Avs are talented enough. Now, again, it's going to involve a few tweaks here, but they're talented enough to win a cup. You can't say that about the Nuggets for me. Even if Murray were healthy, now they would have had a path maybe to the Western Conference Finals. They've never been to the NBA Finals, so it's different from the Avs in that respect as well. But for me, Malone gets bought a year on this because of the Murray injury. If Murray were healthy and they get bounced, let's say, by the Suns, and you had home, and you that's a series you feel like you could have won with Jamal, now you start to go, okay, we got the MVP, we've got these pieces, but every 10 days or so, the effort's being called out, they quit defensively, and these are the words he uses, not me. That would be a fair question. So to answer your question, Raj, I think with Bednar, you have to ask it because of the roster and the expectation of winning the cup with who they are, even though we agree that they're going to have to make tweaks. Malone, for me, gets a padded year in here because of the Jamal Murray injury. Even if they get swept, I don't think that would lead to his demise. Now, that would then turn, he would be on the Bunsen burner. You'd be turning the heat up because now you've got the reigning MVP. Murray's coming back. I think that would set up as possibly his last season. Bednar, the playoff exits now are starting to define him, fair or not. And so that's a question they need to ask themselves. Is he the guy to get them across the finish line? I think with Malone, they're not the best team in the West, and they're certainly not viewed as a championship team. So for me, I think you have to look at Bednar, yes, Malone gets a year because of the Jamal Murray injury.
What makes it interesting, Troy, at least from my perspective, the contrast between the two is with Bednar, yes, to an extent I agree that he and the team are beginning to be defined by these second-round losses. But in the case of Bednar, I can't find, and perhaps this is just the nature of the sport, there's not a lot of specific things I can poke at with Bednar of, you know, you did this and you should have done that, or why did you make this decision? But with Malone, we get these little things here and there, and whether they're a big deal or not, they at least open up the discussion. Here was Michael Malone after their loss in Game 2.
They've had their way with us on both ends of the court. I felt we quit tonight. Which is something you never want to see. So I guess for Game 3, I'm just going to try to find guys that will at least go out there and leave it all on the line. I may have a hard time coming up with five guys that fill that, but these two games, these second halves, have really been disappointing, and that's an understatement.
Now, look, Malone has done things like this before, but Nick, make no mistake, Troy, there's no way you say what he just said there after Game 2 and the comments aren't controversially interpreted by different people. There are going to be different people that view that different ways. There may be some that, hey, he's just trying to fire up his team. Some that, hey, he's done this before. He knows the read of his locker room. But there might be others that say, hey, look, he's done this enough times. Why are you throwing your team under the bus like this when, to your point, Troy, they're undermanned? They're under-talented in the roster-wise in this series, especially without Murray.
And why are you doing it? Malone gives you more opportunities to poke at him, right or wrong, in my opinion, than Bednar does. He opens up that interpretation of it that you could make an argument of, hey, look, maybe a coach with this type of makeup or that would do this might get more out of this team. I'm not saying it's true or not, but you at least leave yourself up open to that, Troy.
Well, the issue he's going to run into in my coverage of professional sports, in the media, we appreciate a coach who's candid.
Sure.
And he lays it bare after bad losses. I mean, literally in nights I've anchored at Denver 7 or Lionel Bienvenu or Nick Rothschild's anchoring, when they have a bad game, you're like, I can't wait for this postgame sound because Malone's going to let him have it. But there comes a point where if you're doing that too much, you can't absolve yourself from that. And when I heard him say, hey, we quit. It was embarrassing. If we play like this, we're going to get swept. I just want five guys who can play hard, and I don't even know if I can find five guys. You have to be careful in your own locker room because you're still the captain of this ship. And this is what I dealt with the Rockies for years. When the Rockies played well, management took credit for it. When the Rockies played poorly, they blamed the players. So it was never the front office's fault. The players knew that. They almost played despite the front office. But if they struggled, it was like, well, they don't take the coaching. They're not good guys. They were never meant for this. But if they succeeded, like, see, we told you when we drafted him, this was our guy. We knew all along. But the front office never was accountable for the failures of players. Every time the team failed, who got blamed? The players. Who got demoted? The players. Who got traded? The players. Hurdle stayed forever. O'Dowd and Guyvet stayed forever. So my point with Malone is he's walking a very slippery slope here. You can only call your team out so much before the team and the players look at you and say, hey, you're the guy running out this game plan. Like, maybe it's you we're not responding to. And that's the slippery slope.
Yep.
We in the media preach the candor, but there becomes a point where the players tune it out and go, when we play well, he champions this. But every time we stink, I'm not hearing him say, I got out coached. And that's what I think he needs to say. The first thing in those press conferences, I got out coached.
I didn't have our team prepared.
I didn't have our team prepared because the players start to hear, we quit. We did that. Who's the we in this? Feels like just us as players. Like you're somehow distancing yourself from us. This is your team.
Schlereth gave a great example this morning when he played for Joe Gibbs that Gibbs might go in the locker room and rip the team when the door is shut, but he'd go out to the press and every time I didn't have my team prepared ready, it's on me. We have not really heard that from Michael Malone. And look, he knows his locker room theoretically better than we do, but it does open it up for interpretation. That said, I think Michael Malone is safe and fine as long as he keeps one thing, and I'll tell you what that is next.
Does your company make safety a top priority? Alliance Safety, Colorado's premier supplier of safety equipment, is here to help make it one. As an authorized distributor of 3M safety products and home to all pro gear, Alliance has a vast inventory of personal protective equipment designed to keep your workers safe, including fall protection, safety glasses, protective gloves, and gas detection solutions. Visit AllianceSafetyInc.net, call 303-388-8766, or stop by the Alliance Safety Warehouse off I-70 and Tower today to lock up all your safety needs.
You're listening to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Here's Tyler Palamas and T-Mac.
Tyler and D-Mac will be back on Monday. I'm Rod Sharon along with Denver 7's Troy Rank on The Drive. Getting you ready for tonight. Nuggets, Suns, Game 3 down at Ball Arena. We've also been recapping the end of the Avs season. And we were talking about Michael. Don't call me Mike Malone. By the way, grab your shirt, denverfan.com/store. Troy, I said there's one thing he's got to do. He's got to protect if he does want to keep this job. And I agree with you. I don't think he should be in discussion of losing his job right now. But he does give you some moments, like the comment he had after Game 2, that make you kind of question a little bit. But I'll tell you something about that sport, and it's a lot different from hockey, which we were talking earlier. They just discard coaches left and right. It's a way to give yourself a spark. In the NBA, if you get a superstar, and it's hard to get one, and we remember the time from when Melo left to where Jokic developed into one, and obviously Jokic has surpassed even what Carmelo did here. When you get one, you got to keep them happy, and you got to do. You kind of have to acquiesce to them. And I know it's not natural for billionaire owners and experienced coaches to want to acquiesce to some kid in his mid-20s, but it's the way the sport works. Michael Malone cannot lose Nikola Jokic.
That is the one thing he cannot do. If he does that, he will be out of here, whether it's after this series or next year or whenever it might be. And when you see Nikola Jokic's comments after Michael Malone's a player of, well, I know I didn't quit, it makes me wonder that. He's the only head coach Jokic has ever known. And it doesn't mean you can't coach him. I mean, I can remember years ago there was talk of Malone being really hard on Jokic about his conditioning and his weight and things of that nature. But at this point, it's different now. Jokic is easily MVP. So with that, and I know everyone's happy he won, and there's accolades that come with that, Troy, and I'm sure everybody down at Ball Arena loves the attention that's come with that. With that will come a little bit of extra juice for Nikola Jokic now. And you start looking at those handful of players that have that, the LeBrons, the Durants, Giannis, you know, some of those. It's in that group now. If you're Michael Malone, you can coach him. You can help him get better, but you can't lose him.
Right, and that's why when Jokic contradicted Malone, it just bears watching. It's something you file away because, as Raj, as you just said, it's a star-driven league. And you saw it with Atlanta, a great example. Trae Young helped get his coach fired, and all of a sudden they became one of the best teams in the East.
And I'm not insinuating Jokic has that personality to want to do that.
He doesn't, but...
But just wait. This dude's the MVP now. Things are going to change.
You got to be careful using the blanket statement of, they all quit. I'll be lucky to find five guys. When one of those guys is the MVP of the league, you have to understand and be cognizant of that as the head coach.
Here's Nikola Jokic after the game.
I mean, I don't think so that the guys quit. You know, when you're losing a lot, you can always kind of put your head down. Maybe put your hand up, head down. But I'm not sure that they quit. I didn't quit, so I can talk about myself.
Well, I mean, you read through that, and look, he's right. Look, people are emotional. Look, I'm sure you know what Michael Malone did, you know, in the Cassidy Hubbard interview, or even after that game. Maybe there was some emotion involved, and it wasn't completely calculated. But it's interesting to me because, especially in the NBA, some of the great head coaches we've seen, everything they do is calculated. So it's a little different to take that into account, and perhaps that's a little bit of what you hear with Joker. I mean, everything that came out of Phil Jackson's mouth was calculated. It was intended to manipulate or adjust. Everything that comes out of Greg Popovich's mouth is intended to manipulate or adjust in some way. We're accustomed to that, and I don't know if that's who Michael Malone is. Boy, that's a big one to go. That if he went in there completely calm, not emotional, and said to myself, I'm going to throw my team under the bus on this Zoom call, then it opens up another discussion. But I don't know how Nikola Jokic feels big picture long term about Michael Malone, but I can tell you one thing. Nikola Jokic won't leave that building before Michael Malone.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the case with head coaches. You know, they all have an expiration date. Malone has said Jokic is his favorite player he's ever coached. His love for him is known. It's clear that, you know, he appreciates everything about him. He's been his champion, as it took a few years for the national media to catch up to the brilliance that is Nikola Jokic. But again, as expectations change, he's now the MVP. It's not good enough to just get in the playoffs and lose after you beat Portland, who's allergic to defense. Like, at some point now, you got to do it. And the bubble, they deserve credit because they showed unbelievable resilience. I will always say bubble ball was an anomaly because you did not have to travel and go on the road. So some of those performances, with all due respect to Jamal Murray, who was a combination of Allen Iverson and Michael Jordan for 2 weeks, I don't see those performances happening on the road at Utah. Like, I just don't see that. We've never seen that outside of those two guys I just mentioned. And so that's where you have to be careful here is, who are the Nuggets? Can they win tough series? Can they win on the road? Not unlike we talk about with the Avs. Now that the prism that you see it through starts to narrow, we're not, oh, it's, they're good again finally, and they've got an MVP. Now it's, hey, how are they going to get to the next step? And is Malone that guy? And as you said, in the NBA, you have to have your star player on your side. And you can coach him, like you said, you can hold him accountable. But you have to be careful in post-game pressers of throwing out the, we quit, we embarrassed ourselves, because he does that every few weeks. It usually involves defense, where he gets frustrated because by trade he's a defensive coach. But again, be careful when one of those guys you're throwing under the bus is the reigning MVP now. That's different.
The second Nikola Jokic won that award earlier this week, he changed. He did, whether you want to admit it or not. Like, when that moniker is placed upon you in that sport, the ultimate star player sport, you are named the best player in the sport. It's changed forever now. As long as he's here, he will have that above him, and it does. It gives him an extra bit of credibility and juice. I think you nailed it, Troy. And look, coaches in every sport, as we compare Malone and Bednar, are going to be evaluated against the perceived talent of the roster. I get it. And that's why maybe an easier conversation about Jared Bednar, in that the dude lost four straight playoff games with a Hart finalist, a Norris finalist, and a Vezina finalist. That's a strong statement when you start to hold coaches accountable comparatively with their talent.
Yeah, it's hard to say we didn't have dudes when you throw that out there. We had the finalists, the best at each of their positions, but we didn't have enough. Like, well, maybe we did.
It
but the Nuggets don't have that argument without Jamal.
He's playing with it with house money because Jamal is out. Absolutely. I agree. But, and look, if Malone doesn't say that after game two, then I think it's a much different conversation. But when you do things like that, you open the door to criticism as a coach. And I'm not saying he needs to tuck his tail, but if he had walked up to the Zoom call after game two and just said to himself and said to the call, look, I didn't have this team prepared to play tonight. That's not our brand of basketball. We're not proud of it. The players know they didn't play well. I know I didn't coach well. Let's get home and get it right and get it fixed. Much different tone today.
Yeah, I agree. And that's how, like, Andy Reid does it with the Kansas City Chiefs, if you ever watch his. And they're boring. That's why I'm saying I appreciate Malone's candor as a member of the media, because it's unbelievable. You listen to that and go, wow, did he just say that about his guys? Whereas Andy Reid does that, hey, this is on me as a coach. I didn't do this. And he creates the human shield
right.
for his players.
What you do behind closed doors? Rip them.
Right.
Fine.
And that's
publicly,
why.
Yeah.
But if you try to get to a championship, you can only play that we quit, we embarrassed ourselves card probably once in the postseason, maybe twice, before your own guys start to look at you with a little bit of a slanted eye, like, really? Like, we're your guys until we're not. Like, you can call them out, but when you do it more than once in a postseason, the locker room then starts to look at you like, wait, when is it this we got embarrassed? When does that include you? Because it feels like you're just blaming us when we lose, and then you're taking credit when we win. That's the fine line of a postseason coach, mm-hmm. where it's easier, and it stinks for the media, it's easier for the coach to just say, that's on me.
Well, when it comes to the coaches, Troy, and I keep coming back to this point because I understand the concept of, is it fair or not fair to fire Michael Malone? Does he deserve to be fired? Same as it goes with Jared Bednar. But the reality is, sports are sometimes about upgrades. Look, if you make a move with a certain player to go get another player that you think gives you a better chance to win, very rarely do we hear, well, that player didn't deserve to lose his job. We hear it mostly with coaches. And I'll give you a couple examples that might change your thinking. Next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive. Here's Tyler Palumbus and D-Mac.
Tyler and D-Mac will be back on Monday. I'm Rod Sharon alongside Troy Rank of Denver 7 here on The Drive as we move closer and closer to Game 3 tonight. Nuggets and Suns. Going to be cool to see a near full capacity at Ball Arena, Troy, as Nikola Jokic gets his MVP award. And obviously we'll get more into the game and what the Nuggets need to do tonight if they're going to beat the Suns. But we've been talking so much about, you know, coaches and the futures of Jared Bednar after what happened last night and potential future of Michael Malone and this concept of you're kind of held against the talent that you have. And in the case of Bednar, you know, Hart finalist, Vezina finalist, Norris finalist. In the case of Malone, yes, he has the league MVP, but, you know, the rest of the roster is without Jamal Murray. It does look a little bit thin, Troy, and so I can understand the conflicting kind of viewpoints as it relates to both perspectives. But something really interesting could potentially happen here that I'm not really sure how to take, and I hadn't put it really into my thought until our producer Richie put it on the rundown today.
as a Hart Trophy finalist, there's a chance Nate MacKinnon could be the MVP of the National Hockey League. And this concept that small market Denver that fights to get attention might have an MVP in basketball and an MVP in hockey, either teams in the conference finals?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes those things can be mutually exclusive. It just seem odd. I mean, I covered a Rockies team with Larry Walker as MVP, and I'm not even sure that team had a winning record. I know they didn't go to the playoffs. It would seem odd in hockey more than basketball, just because Jokic isn't a, you know, he's not a point guard. He's not able to change the game every night in terms of the way he can facilitate teammates, but he can't get his own shot consistently. So I can see it in basketball, if that makes sense, because you can be a star in basketball almost mutually exclusive of your teammates. Hockey's still a team sport, and to have the best player in hockey would make the assumption that you're there to the end, if not in the finals, certainly in the conference finals. And again, that's where, if you're saying we have one of the top defensemen, we have the top offensive player, and we have a goalie who had one of the three best seasons in the net, and we got bounced in the second round, like,
it does kind of point it towards the coach, doesn't it? As much as we talk about the roster construction and how they're built, I understand it when you start comparing coaches to the talent that they have. I understand the argument. It seems merited when you put it in black and white that way.
Well, it's just like the Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the other. Norris finalist, Vezina finalist, MVP finalist.
I have a four-year-old. We watch a lot of Sesame Street.
And we're out in the second round. Like, one of these four doesn't fit. Finalist, second round. Like, you know, it's basketball, football. Like, so, yeah, I mean, Bednar's going to be under scrutiny. But you sign up for this. Like, this is what you sign up for as a head coach of a professional sport. And then when you bring on expectations, evidently, like, man, other coaches have their job and they're not half as successful as Bednar. But you become a victim of your own expectations in sports.
I think that's what got George Karl fired.
Exactly.
They were supposed to win 57 games that year. They did, and then they lost in the first round.
They kept losing in the first freaking round, and people are like, what the heck's going on here? And they were, you know, not unlike the Avs, where you're like, well, this team's going to make a run to the finals, and they're bounced. Then you look up and go, what just happened? It cost George his job, ultimately. And again, I'm not rooting for Bednar. I don't think he's really the issue. I would run it back with Bednar, but not with the same roster. They're going to have some tweaks. With Malone, he's bought security because of the Jamal Murray injury, but they need to win tonight. You don't want to get swept in the series. No one nationally thinks the Nuggets
gentleman
are going to beat
sweep,
the Suns.
He can take it. Gentleman sweep, you know, you lose in five. Heck, I mean, that was the Nuggets deal in the Melo era. Losing five. You're right, though. You know, you
got to win one game at home.
You got to win one game. Tonight's the game you got to win.
You got to win.
Jokic is getting the MVP tonight. You're back at home, near full capacity. You got to win tonight. Because the reality is, if you lose tonight, you're probably not going to win a game four. Most likely. So much is going to be going against you.
Yeah, because you know you're not going to win the series. Players privately know that no team's coming back from 3-0. But, you know, to win the series tonight, the easiest thing would be for Cliff Paul to show up. That would help, because Chris Paul, Thomas Harding from MLB.com, he and I had a running bet about the greatness of Chris Paul, which I said right when he wasn't drafted and the big guy was taken. I can't even, not Zaza.
The Andrew Bogut draft?
Thomas and I, every year we'd have some running bet about something, whether it was a guy's home run total, a pitcher's wins. And the one year it was, Chris Paul, I was saying, like, Chris Paul is going to be a Hall of Famer. Like, I watched him at Georgia Tech, and then he's like, oh, Andrew Bogut.
Wake Forest?
Wake Forest. And he's like, no, it's Bogut. Chris Paul, I don't think he's ever played better than he's played these playoffs.
He really looks rejuvenated. I mean, I kind of forgot he was on the Thunder last year. I mean, think about how many times the guy's been traded the last few years. Yeah. Since the Clippers decided to blow it up, they sent him to Houston. Then
they
Houston,
blow it up.
You know, earlier you said don't make a trade to make a trade for trade's sake. Houston and the Thunder kind of decided, hey, let's just swap point guards and just see what happens.
and Houston blew it up because Harden and Paul, something
didn't work.
It didn't work, and it became personal. Right.
And now here he is in Phoenix, and it seems like a great fit for him, and he plays well with Booker. And look, he's going to be tough to deal with tonight. And you heard him. You heard his comments. Hey, look, they're going to be fired up for Jokic to get MVP. He knows that Denver's probably going to be hot to start the game. That dude's a general, though. And, you know, you see it on the floor for sure. But he was a big upgrade for them.
Right.
And Troy, that was the point I wanted to make when it comes to coaching, because I think there's this disconnect we look at as fans between coaches and players. And with coaches, we kind of look at it like a job, like your job or my job of, you know, did our job performance meet the criteria to be able to keep our job, or do we deserve to be fired, unfortunately? And I think the reality is in pro sports, it's not always that way. For one, getting fired from a, you know, look, I'm not championing anybody getting fired, but getting fired from a salary that pays millions of dollars and knowing an overwhelming majority of these coaches will almost immediately find new work, it removes some of the real life stigma for the construction worker who gets laid off. So I don't think it's a fair comparison. But when you look at players, NBA, NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball, general managers are always looking to upgrade their rosters. They are. They're always looking to upgrade their rosters. And we never necessarily think about the player they're replacing. Did he deserve to get fired? When Jameis Winston threw 30 touchdowns and 30 picks, did he deserve to get fired? We don't really like think of it that way. Like, they upgraded to Tom Brady. Did Tim Tebow deserve? He probably did deserve to get fired. But we upgraded to Peyton Manning. Is there such thing as upgrading your coach, especially when you have a winning team? You brought up the Dungy Gruden example. Did Dungy deserve to get fired by the Bucs? No, but they viewed a possible upgrade. Do we need to look at it with these two positions as possible upgrades? I'll give you names next.
Here's Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
Tyler and D-Mac are going to be back on Monday. I'm Rod Sheeran along with Denver 7's Troy Rank here on The Drive. Moving towards Game 3 tonight. Suns and Nuggets. And Troy, before the break, I had mentioned, as we've been talking so much today about Malone and Bednar, this concept I have of, it feels like we treat coaches differently than players in sports. And players, we're always looking for an upgrade. We never talk about, you know, that player deserving to get fired or that player deserving to be traded or cut or, you know, whatever it might be. It's, oh, you had the opportunity to get a better player at that position to make you better. But with coaches, it's like we treat it more of a job. Does your job performance merit it? Like, you've brought up several times that losing Jamal Murray kind of gives Michael Malone that cushion year. But my question is, and I'm not advocating this, but I'm just curious your thoughts on it, as well as on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043. What if there were a possible coach that you viewed as a significant upgrade to what you currently have, even if what you have is good? Is it something you consider? So not just firing a guy because you're going to fire him and you're going to do a big search, but a guy you view as an upgrade. Like, a great example would be, you know, clearly the Broncos thought Gary Kubiak was an upgrade from John Fox. And did they even interview anybody else for that position when they were going to Gary Kubiak back in 2015?
Vance Joseph.
That's right. You interviewed Vance Joseph because Rooney Rule. So obviously they had to interview a minority candidate. But I just wonder, if is there a name out there, if you're either Tim Conley or you're Joe Sakic, can you just wonder, but I get more out of this group that I have with this person? How do you think Phil Jackson wound up with all these jobs? He was viewed as a guy you wanted to identify and you wanted to target. I'll give you a hypothetical example, and I mentioned his name earlier, Mike Babcock, okay? Former head coach of the Red Wings, former head coach of the Maple Leafs. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's amongst the winningest head coaches in NHL history, and he's currently coaching collegiate hockey. Is it possible, if you're Joe Sakic, can you sit there and could you say to yourself, you know what, that's a guy who's been there, he's done that, he's won it all. And the roster I've got right now, and you know how much GMs love their rosters, roster I have right now is more talented than the ones he had in Toronto and Detroit. Possibly look at things that way. You identify a specific person you view as an upgrade with your coach.
I mean, it happens. Again, I use the example of Buck Showalter in baseball with the Diamondbacks and Yankees. When he left, they both won world titles. Sometimes you need that different voice to finally get it. We talked about Gruden with Tampa Bay. It certainly wasn't fair that Tony Dungy
his work didn't merit getting fired.
Right, but they just thought, we need something. We need that extra push. We need that extra oomph, the secret sauce, if you will. In my case, I don't think it's Bednar. I really don't. I just think stylistically, yeah, they've got to make tweaks to the roster, because a different voice from the coach, maybe that coach challenges them more. Maybe, you know, he's more of a, you know, old school, a little more hard on the players. All that could be true, but I just don't think, if stylistically they don't tweak some things, that they're not going to win in the postseason. Because let's say Babcock comes in, and they have Girard, a defenseman, and they have something. Are they going to suddenly be a physical team based on the coach? For me, there's just a few personnel tweaks you've got to make. In baseball, I equate it to when you have a starting rotation with a bunch of junk ballers, finesse guys, command guys, they can win a lot of games in the regular season. But when you get into October in baseball, who wins? For the most part, power pitchers who can produce strikeouts. And so if I have control guys, we can win. But at some point, we got to have a guy to anchor our staff that gets K's. So it's second and third, one out. We're not playing our defense in because I know my guy's going to get a strikeout. And so that's how I look at the Avs. It's like they just, for me, they need that defenseman who puts his footprint, if you will, on this team, like a dominant personality defensively. That's not Makar. He is talent-wise, but he's not a dominant personality. He looks like he's 15 years old.
So if I went in time machine 20 years back and I stole Adam Foote and I brought him to today and I dropped him on the ice in that series against Vegas and you changed nothing else, think the Avs are still playing, Troy?
I think they're still playing with a chance to win a game seven. I don't think they would have lost at home with Foote. So they would have lost last night and they could have still won the series in seven. Like, that's how much right. I think that type
it's
of
a roster
play.
Issue then. You know, at least the way you're advocating
that's
it.
Like when they went and right. got Rod Blake. Like, they were short and
they wanted a guy to lead the power play.
We need a guy in the power play. We need a guy in the blue line that's a little different than what we've got. Like you mentioned, upgrade. Those were really good Avs teams, but Blake was like, jeez, are you kidding me? Like, so
you're giving up Adam Dedmarsh, Peter Forsberg's best friend, core guy of the first cup team to do it. I mean, you got to give up something to get something.
Right. And that's why I think it's more of a personnel issue with the Avs, slight tweaking on the back end. You know, maybe I hate to see if Groovy goes, he goes. Like, he played well enough to get a new contract. The only reason I say he might go is he can look at some of the guys getting paid in the league and say, I'm a $6 million a year goalie.
Oh, no, if Colorado didn't pay him, someone else
will. Someone's going to based on his season, and they may say, oof, we really loved you this year, but we also know what you were like for a couple of years. We're not going to pay you $6 million. So he might just be too expensive for their taste. And if that's the case, that, to me, amplifies the need to add a defenseman who can put his stamp on this team.
Oh, with the way their defense was this year, Troy, if Gerby was not a Vezina-quality goaltender, which he was, he is a finalist, they would not have been a President's Trophy-winning team. He helped cover up some things for them this year, and they did get borderline elite goaltending for him throughout the year, but I can understand a risk aversion to not wanting to reward it just based on one season when you can only pay so much. I'd understand it, but boy, you do that, to your point, it heightens the need to improve the defense.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because you can outscore people in the regular season. You really don't do it in the playoffs. Like, every once in a while you have a weird game. Don't bring up the 7-1 game that when they beat a backup goalie. Like, don't even mention that to me. But these other games, it's around that 2-3 goal mark. The over-under's around 5.5-6. So you're going to try to win 3-2. That involves defense. You're not going to get 45 shots on goal and have your stars all getting a goal each. Like, that's not playoff hockey traditionally. And so for me, the one thing I would do is I would just look at that blue line. And maybe it's you add two guys and you get more physical. Maybe it is you bring Kadri back and make him promise, can you not do something stupid in the postseason and get suspended?
I promise, Coach.
But they did miss him in this series. They did miss him in this series because he does bring an edge to him that they were missing. Now, he deserved to be suspended. Whether it should have been eight games, that's a fair argument that we'll have for another day. But they missed him. Wouldn't you agree?
No. I think they missed some. I don't know him specifically, but they missed the edge. They did miss the edge. Flipping on the basketball side of it from the coaching perspective, look, that is a sport where, look, we talk a lot about star players, but there have been some star coaches in history. And you do wonder, again, I don't think it'll happen, but if there is that guy that you identified, the best example for me is the Warriors. The Mark Jackson Warriors, Mark Jackson, at least in terms of the team's performance, did not merit getting fired at all. It was actually pretty comparable to Michael Malone's. In fact, I believe, and I'll look it up in a sec, I believe it actually might have been at a higher winning percentage than Michael Malone. But they just had a feeling, and I brought that up earlier, if you just have the feeling this just isn't the right guy to lead our team. And I don't know how the Nuggets feel about Michael Malone, if he's the one to get them over the hump. But they were a team that was a first-round, second-round team, the Warriors, with an MVP-caliber player in Steph Curry. And they viewed a guy who had no head coaching experience, but was a crafty player, a well-respected, high-intelligence player, as an upgrade that they moved. And it did work out. And I do wonder, and I have a name in mind, but I do wonder if that's something Tim Connelly at least thinks about looking at what happened with the Warriors.
Well, it's fascinating with Kerr because he almost went to the Knicks. And
he almost did.
He would have flamed out there. Nobody would.
But he was the right fit for that
team. That's what we talk about this, Raj, is when you're talking about upgrade, that's the key word here. Not, oh, they lost, fire the coach. No, it's if you're moving on from him because you see someone specifically that fits your data analytic model. Like Steve Kerr walked in, it's like, we're going to run this offense. We're running screens. We're running cuts. Like, he changed them fundamentally on how they ran their offense. They were crazy talented under Mark Jackson. But the other thing I told you, Raj, is before you go to move on from the coach, you got to ask yourself, how long after we fire this guy is he going to get hired? If that answer's 5 minutes, maybe it's you as an organization that need to look in the mirror. Like, because if we have this guy that everyone in the league would hire, maybe it's something we're doing. In the case of Mark Jackson, he hasn't coached since. So they were right. Now, I'm not disparaging Mark Jackson. I'm just saying the Warriors sensed something with Jackson that they weren't going to win a title with him.
Right.
That's not a personal criticism or indictment as much as we put this roster together because we think we can win the ultimate prize, not go to the playoffs every year. That's not the goal. And that's how these prisms in which you see teams, that's where it costs good coaches their job. I mean, who was before Vogel with the Lakers? I can't even remember who LeBron got canned.
Luke Walton.
Right. And maybe even before that, was there even another? Was it Walton, then Vogel? But my and then there was the guy from that got fired by the Lakers that was the foreign coach. That came in, or that was with the Cavs.
Oh, no, you're thinking about the Cavs. You're thinking of David Blatt. Then he got fired from the Cavs.
My point. Nobody's going to tell you Blatt's a bad coach. He was one of the best international coaches for years. He wasn't the best fit for that team.
Right.
That's where we're kind of going with this conversation.
Mark Jackson got canned after a 51 win.
Right, and he's never coached again. Right? He's never gotten another job. So that's my point. Right. When you say, if we fire this guy, are we crazy? Because 10 teams would be hiring him. That's on you as an organization.
In 2012, Mark Jackson went 47-35, and that was the six-seeded Warriors team that beat the Nuggets in the first round. Then he came back the next year. They won 51 games, although they did lose in a game 7 in the first round. And they made their decision right there that they viewed Steve Kerr as a better fit. Comparably, those are better numbers than what Michael Malone has done with Denver. But they had a guy they thought fit with their vision. So I'm going to give you a name. I'm not championing firing anybody. I don't think, but who would fit that profile? Los Angeles Clippers assistant and current Boston Celtics head coaching candidate Chauncey Billups. Could you, if you're the Nuggets, sit there and project to yourself? Do we really see ourselves, the confetti test, going all the way? Or is that the next Steve Kerr? Or Steve Nash now, as we're seeing. Is that the next one? The point guard who had the great pedigree, the toughness. I'm not advocating for it, but those are the discussions you can talk about when you start talking about, is it a potential upgrade? I know it's a risk to take a winning coach out and then put someone
who's never coached at any level.
but it sure as hell worked pretty well for Golden State.
It did, and it's worked for the Nets, although, you know, a fire hydrant could coach James Harden, Kyrie Irving,
Kevin Durant.
I mean, he could coach them to 50 wins if they're healthy. I mean, I could coach them. But he put D'Antoni behind the scenes, does a lot of the legwork, so Steve has been able to learn on the job. So if you did put Chauncey in a position like that with a team, with playoff expectations beyond first round, he would have to be surrounded by a couple veteran assistants because that's not fair to Chauncey to say, first ever coaching job.
You're coming home.
No experience.
Take us all the way.
Like, that's not fair to him.
Right.
Now.
But it's a hot name right now.
Yes. And he's going to be a head coach within two years. He is. And where Chauncey has an advantage, I think, to be a great head coach, he's very relatable to current players. Mm-hmm. He's got the respect of the room because he won. He should be a Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. To me, he's eventually going to be a Hall of Famer. It's just, again, it's going to come down to the minutia of it.
By the way, I threw out a name, the RamosLaw.com text line really likes my name. The same people that were earlier. No, Michael Malone is Chauncey.
Now, again, I'm saying Malone clearly has this year.
Sure.
But Chauncey's going to be a head coach. And would you feel like, if you're the Nuggets,
if I don't get him now, I won't get him next year.
Right. And that's a fun conversation. And it's, again, it's not fair to those involved. I think that would be a little tough on Chauncey to come back home with a team that you're saying basically Western Conference Finals are bust next year.
You're handing him Steve Nash expectations. It's the exact same model for
probably
the most
a tick
part.
Below because Nash is win it all or bust. I think
I meant Steve Kerr. I meant when Steve Kerr came into Golden State.
Right.
Look at the model of what happened there.
Right.
Of
Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, I think so. And look, I don't think they'll do it. But again, those are the conversations you have to have, let alone you never know if there's a name that wants to get back into coaching. And, you know, does Pat Riley want to come down from the office? I doubt it. But, you know, those are the kind of conversations you have. So just be careful with it. I would say Denver sports fans, with both guys, with Bednar, Malone, that, you know, doing your due diligence and even exploring names doesn't necessarily implicate one of those people for not doing a good enough job to merit keeping their positions. But it is easier to change that than it is to change the roster. Because, look, I don't think anybody's picking the Nuggets. You know, maybe they're picking to win tonight, but to win the series against the Suns. But next year, when you bring back that team and eventually Jamal comes back, there will be real pressure on that team to perform and perform at a high level, maybe more than we've seen. Because when was the last time the Nuggets had expectations? I always feel like they're kind of like people do it to dampen it. Well, yay, MVP, but hey, if they lose in the first round, it's
well,
okay.
Well, it's fascinating because this year they should have been Western Conference Finals or bust, but the Western Conference changes so quickly, and anytime LeBron's healthy with AD, any other team is just not viewed as the favorite. Now, I think now going forward, LeBron is not going to have carte blanche as a favorite because of his age and the injuries. But this year, based on what the Nuggets did last year in the bubble, in any other year, Raj, we would have said Western Conference Finals are nothing based on how they finished last year. But the season changes. You look at the Clippers, get their new coach. If you talk about making a coaching change, it's exactly why Doc Rivers got fired. Those players were not responding to Doc Rivers, and they couldn't get rid of small game Paul George after one season. So what are you
talking about, playoff Paul like
yeah,
that?
So you move on. This is similar to the conversation we're having now. But you could argue, to my point, and the listener did bring up a good point. Jacques Vaughn is on that Nets staff too. So Steve Nash did the right thing. Jacques Vaughn, D'Antoni. If Chauncey were to become a head coach with a playoff expectation team, he needs to have guys that
Larry Brown right next to him.
Somebody, yeah, exactly. But to my point of say it out loud, if we fire our coach, how long before he's hired? And if that answer is 5 minutes, Doc Rivers was hired in like 2 minutes.
Michael Malone would be hired
by the 76ers. And look at how that has fit. He has made that Sixers team, which was just a dog on the road last year, terrible. Now they all these things you hear, they don't play hard, they don't play big and big. Rivers is a better fit. Is he a different coach than he was with the Clippers? No, but he couldn't get Kawhi and George to buy in to the gutty, grimy image that those guys had all built the previous year. The Clippers overachieved. They were a great team to watch. Then they brought in stars, and he couldn't do it. It's not unlike with Brad Stevens with the Celtics. Anytime they haven't had expectations, he's coaching his butt off. You're like, man, this guy's a great coach. You give him Kyrie Irving, and it's like, oh, it was just an absolute circus. He couldn't control it. So, and I think that's why they promoted Brad Stevens, is they knew if they fired him, which it looked like he was going to get fired, that they were going to lose him in 5 minutes. So they basically said to Danny Ainge, thanks, but no thanks. We're moving Brad upstairs because we don't want to lose him in the building. They valued him so much that even though as a head coach he didn't live up to expectations, they promoted him. And that's why I'm saying, like, when we're having this conversation, Doc Rivers, again, if he stays with the Clippers, I don't think they go anything differently because I just think for whatever reason the chemistry wasn't right.
It could get stale, any number of things.
Right, but he perfectly fit KJ, Rondo, and Ray Allen. Every button he pushed worked, but with this group, for whatever reason,
it's working.
It's not working with the Clippers where it does with the Sixers.
With the Sixers.
And that's where we'd have to ask at some point with both the Avs and the Nuggets, is it a coach away? Again, I don't think it is with the Avs. I run it back with Bednar. Malone going into next year with a healthy Murray conceivably in November or whenever he's out, the pressure will be squarely on Malone if they get bounced as we all expect in the second round here.
KKFN, KKFN, HD1, Longmont, Denver. 5 o'clock, Troy. Tyler and D-back will be back Monday. Roger's Troy hanging out.
23.
Listen to these awful highlights.
What a big avalanche. played by Riley Smith. Back out for holding. Score! Martinez crosses. Carlson scores! Here's Rantanen. Looks to his left. Shoots. Scores! By Petrangelo. Score! And the flex in and the Golden Knights go back on top. Here's Burakovsky with a shot. He scores! It's 3-3. Here's Tuck with a drive. Missed the net. And Petrangelo scores! It will be the Vegas Golden Knights and the Montreal Canadiens in round three.
Everybody's working for the weekend.
Well, it's all weekend now for the Avs. Every day is a weekend now, Troy. It's over. Feels premature. It does, doesn't it? It wasn't supposed to end this way for this team, for the Avalanche to go out in round two against Vegas, four straight losses. You and I are sitting here talking about if Jared Bednar's future should be in jeopardy and how Joe Sakic is going to reshape the lineup for a team that a week ago were riding high after they blitzed the St. Louis Blues. Boy, this sports world has a funny way of turning things, doesn't it?
Raj, just throwing sea breeze in the open wound. I'm sure I've got some salt around here, too. We can just throw in it. Some sea salt.
I'm hurting like the whole state is today.
It's different because I didn't grow up an Avs fan. I'm not a hockey guy. I covered the Avs every home game in 96 and 97 when I worked at the Times Call. So I got a crash course in hockey. Had no idea I was watching some of the greatest players of all time. Sakic, Forsberg, Foote, you know, I mean, and the greatest rivalry in hockey at that time with the Red Wings. But I enjoy watching the Avs. Again, part of the reason I switched to DirecTV, other than I got Next Light and Longmont for my internet, was because I wanted to watch the Avs and Nuggets.
Right.
I really like hoops. I enjoy hockey at the highest level, and the Avs are a great watch. Unfortunately, this watching season ended around too soon. And I'm not going to give them the excuse of they shouldn't have had to play the Knights in the second round. Listen.
They
went 4-3-1 against them in the regular season. They knew this matchup was coming. They geared themselves toward it to winning home ice. It was on them. And they lost. And it's not like, oh my God, they choked. That's not the right word, even though it feels that way. It's just that it's hard as a fan when you watch a team that has championship talent. This isn't an underdog where you touch their nose and they have a wet nose and it's a fun story and Disney's filming it. And we're going to see a movie on it and all they give us goosebumps. No, you watch them and go, dang, they are so freaking talented.
And fun to watch. They created an entertaining product.
That's why it's hard to like, man, it's over.
That's it.
Like some bad team, there's some teams over, you know, they overachieve and it's over. And you're like, you know what? They were living on borrowed time. They weren't really that good. This Avs team, you know, you watch them and you could make a compelling argument. They should have been in the cup. I think they would have beaten Montreal. Now, I don't think they would have beaten Tampa Bay. Having watched Tampa Bay this postseason, I'm not sure anybody beats Tampa Bay. I could easily be wrong. I'm not a hockey guy. But I wanted them to be in the finals against Tampa Bay.
I just think we have another thing to hate the Minnesota Wild for. Couldn't get it done in game
exactly,
seven.
Exactly, Wild. What the heck?
No, but this was, it felt, this year felt different going in. You know, I equated it earlier to the Broncos in 2014. That year didn't feel that much different. I know they had brought in DeMarcus Ware and Aqib Talib and TJ Ward, but it felt like running it back with some upgrades. This year, for whatever reason, the way things clicked, it just felt like this was supposed to be the Avs' year. This was the year to break through. And I've heard Zach mention this several times that, you know, oftentimes in playoff, it's about the climb and, you know, learning from the experiences of losing to Dallas and, you know, along the way that the McKinnons and the Landeskogs of the world had picked up. And this was the year you're supposed to take all those experiences and use them to formulate better play and win that Stanley Cup. And look, I could be wrong. Maybe they do run it back and next year's that year and the hurt from this goes forward. But the loss feels different, Troy, because, and this is the thing that feels odd to say, I don't think I'm going to sound weird. This may come out weird. Okay. I don't think the Avalanche played badly against Vegas. I think the matchup was hard because of the way they're stylistically built. That's the way I interpreted it watching it. There were moments where certain players played poorly. Last night was not Grubby's finest hour. The top line was very quiet for several games. I'm not dismissing those factors. But it felt like in many respects, especially with the top line, the Vegas was doing that to the Avs. They were imposing their will on the Avs. And that's what makes this really tough. So it'd almost be easier if Paige went out and laid an egg and, you know, what do we do? But and it's happened before. But boy, the Avs looked like the worst team after game one in the series.
Yeah, it didn't feel like an upset. That was the hard part to stomach, too. It wasn't like, man, they got knocked out, but they were the better team. It didn't feel that way.
This isn't, I've heard a lot of equations today to 96 Broncos Jacksonville. And the feeling is maybe the same. But the Broncos were such a more talented team than Jacksonville. They just, they played badly that day.
They got upset.
They got upset. I don't feel like the Avalanche got upset. I feel like they played against a team that they actually scored, they had the same amount of points as, and just the other team played a lot better. And I think the styles had a lot to do with that.
Yeah. I mean, and that's why I say, because if you look at history, like before the internet and social media, teams were given a chance to organically grow and learn from the, like the climb, as Zach by mentioned. Look at the Chicago Bulls under Jordan. How many years did they get knocked out by the Celtics and Pistons? But what changed? Oh, by the way, we got Scottie Pippen. Like, they weren't going to get through until you finally get a piece that allows you to get through.
Well, there was another change.
And Phil Jackson, because Doug Collins had reached the breaking point, and Jordan had reached the breaking point with Collins to the point, like, at some point, like, you just know as an organization, man, this coach is really good. I don't see us winning the finals with him. But the idea of, you know, you don't make massive change when you're really good. I do understand that in sports, because you don't really sometimes know how good you have until you start blowing stuff up and you go, man, now we stink. Now we're looking at 3 to 4 years to fix it. So to me, it's cosmetic changes. We're talking about earrings. We're talking about eyelashes. You know what I mean? We're not talking about a new suit, a new hairdo. We're not talking about changing our appearance. But if you watch this the last 2 years, and our texters can weigh in on this, if you watch this Dallas series and the Vegas Night Series, and you still believe that they're fine and it was just bad breaks, just let me know your argument for that. Because what I saw was a team that just isn't built to win in the playoffs. They're just not diverse enough. Because you can't win 5-4 in the playoffs consistently. It's just like playoff baseball. Nobody wins playoff baseball outside of an anomaly year in there, 7-6, 10-9. You're going to win 3-2, 2-1. You've got to have an ace that can get a shutout. When everything's going wrong, our guy's going to go 7 1/3, 10 Ks, one run. Where is that guy on the Avs that just puts his foot down on the blue line, says, tonight, boys, we're winning this one 1-0?
They don't have that player on the
and
roster.
They needed that game somewhere in here. And it would have been preferable last night.
Right.
And it was the exact opposite. It was mindless, dumb mistakes. They had 3 goals that went in last night that were just dumb mistakes.
Let me ask you this, and I'm asking all of the fans this as well, because obviously it's so raw now. It's under 24 hours removed. Has our context changed and we look at things differently in 3 weeks if Vegas is hoisting the cup? And, hey, look, maybe they just were the best team and they just took care of us. And, hey, no shame in that. Don't need to blow everything up when you lose to the best team.
But wouldn't it then tell you how are we going to raise the cup if we have to get through them? If for me, it would just cement the idea that, yeah, hindsight, now a little bit of space, letting it breathe. We got beat by a better team, a really good team that now is the Stanley Cup champion. But how are we going to be the champion when they're in the West? What are we going to do to address them? Like that's like when you look at how Tampa Bay beat the Chiefs, it's like, we're going to find, and they were compromised with the offensive line, but you're not going to beat us 35-31. We're going to have the defense that can hold you down where we can be. That's like, if I'm the Avs and I'm watching this, and if they go on to win the cup, I fully expect them to be in the cup finals. What is our counterpunch? Even the Broncos, for all the criticism they have earned and deserved the last 5 years, where I wish they would have taken Justin Fields and I wish they had dressed their quarterback Boy, position.
I see those pictures of Justin Fields online today with his Bears hat on. He's
I wish they would have dressed it. And again, I'm not going to sit here. I hope Aaron Rodgers becomes available in the trade for him. But that aside, the one thing the Broncos did is if we're going to have to beat Justin Herbert, Derek Carr, and Patrick Mahomes,
We need DBs.
So you get Darby, you get Fuller, you get Sertan, you've got Callahan, and you got Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons. You give yourself a chance. Now, I think the model of trying to beat them 20-17 is foolish.
That's the anomaly that you talked about earlier in the other sports. Really, Super Bowl 50's model is an anomaly. The 2000
Ravens. You can't win that way right now.
2002 Bucks. Maybe 1 year, like the Broncos did, but consistently, it's really challenging to do. And perhaps the Avalanche's style would be difficult to win consistently.
But you could win with the Broncos with that defense the way it's comprised if you have functional quarterback play.
Correct.
If you're asking the defense to win 17-14 and 20-17 on the weekly, you've got no chance. You're an 8-9, 7-10 team. If you have an offense that scores 25 points with that defense, now you got something. Because that defense then will get takeaways, because if you're scoring 25 points, you're getting the lead once in a while. Last 2 years, Raj, Broncos are 1-15 when trailing at halftime.
That doesn't surprise me.
But that's what
they haven't had great quarterback play.
But you can't get takeaways that way.
Right.
My point, Evan, this is a great defense. Yes, but when it's 3rd and 8 and the other team's on their own 23, do you think they're going to drop their do a 7-step drop to allow Chubb and Millard, and they're up 20-10? No, they're going to throw a dump pass or run the ball and punt it and say, go 80 yards, we dare you, because we don't think you can. That's what neutralizes their best asset, which is their defense. And football, the more I watch it without a star quarterback, it's a complementary sport. To be a great defense, you need a functional offense in the current NFL, because you have to be leading or close to force the other team to take chances with the ball, because that is a risk-averse lead. Drew Locke led the league in picks with 16. He played 12-plus games. This idea that they're all slinging it around and throwing, Manning had 28 picks his rookie year. That was a different NFL. Locke led the league with 16 picks. One per game is the high. So it's a risk-averse league. So to make a team take risk, you've got to have a lead. You got to. What game did we see that happen? Oh, the Jets. And when Bradley Chubb looked like the best player on the planet, because the Jets were behind and they had to take chances. And all of a sudden, Chubb is just an absolute writing a diary of havoc. So, again, that's my point. Like, with the Avs, I want to see, they just need a physicality, and it could literally come from one guy. A tone setting.
Perhaps
one
it could,
guy.
Yeah. Sometimes you underestimate the value one guy. I've said several times through this series, I'm just such a longtime Nuggets fan, and yes, you know, send your well wishes my way for investing my emotions into that franchise over the last 25, 30 years, but I said this to some of my friends. I go, you know who I wish we had in this series? I said Kenyon Martin. Just toughness. And it really kind of equates with the Avalanche as well. Just, you know, I kind of wish we had a guy who just maybe shove a shoulder right into Chris Paul's jaw when he's going down the lane and just set a tone. I was always happy when Aaron Gordon bucked up the other night a little bit against Jay Crowder. And I think same premise with the Avalanche. You're right. They don't have that guy in the blue line. And perhaps to your point, they did miss Kadri a little bit in this series.
That's what we saw last night with the Bucks. P.J. Tucker going after Durant. And no one's going to fuse those guys' talent. But the Bucks had clearly said, we're going to muck this up. We're going to play in the mud. And they won, 86-83?
Yeah,
and you got guys challenging Durant. But it was the same idea. We can't outscore you. You do better than we do it. Your best version of scoring,
right,
will never match.
And Vegas would be foolish to get into a track meet with the Avs.
Right.
So they didn't
lost.
Do it.
Right. So what do? They just like pinch, transition defense. And the other thing Vegas does, like when we talk about toughness, I haven't seen this many blocked shots since the days Mark Eaton, God rest his soul, and Gobert. Like every time I look up, there are freaking guys just diving. Like they're TJ Hooker diving in front of bullets. Like it's unbelievable. How many do the Avs have? I mean, it had to pale in comparison.
Oh, I'm sure.
Vegas, it literally was like their skill set. Transition defense and just block shots. I don't recall a series where I've seen one team block more shots. And that is clearly a mindset.
You know, I mentioned a few minutes ago, Troy. By the way, I'm Rod Sharon. He's Troy Rank of Denver 7. We're in for Tyler and D-Mac today on the drive. The comparisons I've heard today to Broncos 96 Jacksonville. Now, while I feel like the feeling is maybe comparable, the feeling of heartache, I think there are different scenarios, because the Broncos were clearly upset, whereas the Avalanche met what appeared to be an equally matched team with them in terms of points that outplayed them. But, boy, you start running down the list of some of the heartbreaking games that we've had around here, Troy. And I know you and I have talked during the break about a few of them. Not that it's a specific game from last night, but just the series and the disappointment of a team we thought that could go the wrong way. We could have went a long way. I mean, you covered that Broncos team that lost to the Ravens in overtime. I was on the sideline freezing in double overtime. The Nuggets lost in Portland a couple years ago, or against Portland, excuse me, in Game 7. The Anthony Carter game against the Lakers, but, you know, back in the conference finals. I mean, I don't know if this Avs team, while it may hurt because we really feel like they could have went all the way, I don't know if it has, like, that long-lasting hurt that those memories I just gave brought up. Who knows? Look, if they break up the Avs and this is as far as they go, maybe we'll say, hey, there was that year where they blew it against Vegas. But my feeling is that it's not. It doesn't feel like the end for the Avs. It just feels like it's perhaps they're going to have to turn the chapter and make a tweak. But it doesn't feel like the end to me.
Right. It feels like a defining moment because we know McKinnon's going to be there. We know McCarr is going to be there. Their top players are going to be there. And that's like when Manning lost to the Colts, Ravens, the Colts. Anytime Manning didn't get to the Super Bowl, you knew the clock was ticking on him. So when you have Peyton Manning, the expectation was clear. Win the Super Bowl with him on the roster. And so when they lost to the Colts, you're like, oh my, like that hurt because you knew you're only going to have a few years of Manning based on his age and his injury history. It's different with the Avs because they're so young and they're so talented, but this can be a defining moment of we've reached kind of the expiration date mm-hmm. of this style. We've proven we can be the best regular season team and there's merit in that, but we didn't put this roster together to be the most fun watch
right.
and the best regular season team. Now you could see the frustration with McKinnon last night. Like, I'm tired of this. It's time to win. And that, for me, is going to require a little bit of finessing of the roster. Just to run it back, I think, is foolish. Because when people say just run it back and don't do anything, you are then assuming that other teams are going to be the same. That's where teams make a mistake in sports. Well, we're fine. We'll just bring all our guys back. Well, you're assuming that all the other teams aren't going to get better. And that's where they make a mistake. Where Tampa Bay, they were the one team that could say, we're going to bring everyone back because they thought last year was just going to be a year where they got to probably the NFC Conference Finals. They didn't expect to win it last year. I guarantee you privately, they thought it was year two with Brady. They were going to win it. They had their anomaly. But these teams that don't do anything, and I covered the Rockies for 15 years, that was their strategy. Hope was their strategy. If Tulo and Cargo are healthy, when they play together, our winning percentage is .583. They never play together. They're always hurt. Like, when hope is your strategy and just running it back is your strategy, that's dangerous when you're trying to get to the final step. That's why I think we are going to see at least one significant move with the Avs,
right.
whether it's that Landeskog walks or they move on from Grubby, or somehow there's going to be one move where we go, okay, they looked at the night series and said, we have to make at least this one adjustment to get through the playoffs.
You said the words defining moments, Troy, and the way I think of it, and I'll date myself slightly with it, but what's the story of the DVD? What's the title of the DVD? And yes, there's these things called DVDs, guys, that used to put in for movies. Now I guess it's what's the story of the iTunes documentary. But when the Avs win the cup with this group, what's the story? Could this be the defining moment that they lead it with of the disappointment after Vegas, and then they cut to the interview? You're a TV guy, Troy. You know how you guys build this to Joe Sakic, where he goes, we knew that day, walking off coming off the ice against Vegas, we had to change. And that's why we did blank. And I remember it because if I watch my Broncos Super Bowl 50 DVD, it starts with them walking off the field after losing to the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, and then it cuts to them walking off the field after losing to the Colts, and it's John Elway talking about, we knew we needed to be this. I think it was like tougher, more physical, this. And then they cut to the answer was Gary Kubiak. And that was essentially the story of that DVD, so to speak. And I just wonder, if you're going to win a championship, is this the defining moment?
It's going to be titled From Pretty to Gritty. At some point, they have to be able to throw the sawdust down, get dirt under their fingernails, and win some games like that in the postseason. It doesn't mean you eschew this great offensive talent. We're not saying that. Just like with those Broncos, they had more finesse than shampoo. They could only beat you one way. They had Paris Lenning starting at linebacker. They had guys from the
XFL.
It's like, and then you watched, I was covering that, when Cam Chancellor hit Demaryius Thomas, you're like, okay, no chance. And that's, Elway saw the same thing. Like, we can't win with Peyton throwing 45 times a game. Like, he could get his stats that way, but we can't win a Super Bowl that way.
And perhaps, Troy, there's a reason President's Trophy winners struggle in the NHL playoffs historically. Nuggets, Suns tonight. What do the Nuggets have to do to get a win and get back in the series? Let's break it down next.